Good evening. Good morning. Welcome to the second class of Transforming Problems. Our first class was 2 weeks ago, and we had a visiting teacher, and then last week was a holy day. So it's really a great week. I know a couple people are here for their first time, but it's a great week to start because we'll be digging in with Steep as our teacher, whereas 2 weeks ago was fairly self-contained, I feel like. So it's still a great week to start. If you have any questions about discovering Buddhism in general, about certificates, about keeping track of things, my name's Erin. I have been here for this whole series of discovering Buddhism. Our teacher changes with each module, but I'm the consistent face, and we have this module and one after this. I want to encourage every single person who has been taking any of these classes in this session to celebrate with us after our module in October, so that we can, you know, just rejoice in all the effort that we've put into this discovering Buddhism material. And a lot of people keep going and retaking and like that, so that's totally fine, but we still got to stop and rejoice. So you'll see that on the calendar. So yeah, see me after if you have any questions. A lot of times a lot of us sit at the table out there and just kind of chat and discuss, and anyone is welcome to do that if you want a little discussion time after this. Welcome, Steve.
I think it just warms up. Yeah, it just takes a few minutes. I just want to keep talking because if everybody's looking at me, I have to do something. For how many people is this your first time here tonight? It's totally fine. Okay, welcome. Welcome. And so, like Erin was describing, this is this ongoing class. We're coming kind of towards the end of this. How many years? A year and a half? 2 years? Of
22 years this month.
22 years?
No.
Okay. Feels like 22 years. Okay, and so then we just repeat and start again, you know, until we get it right. So you can come in at any point. If things are confusing, yes, definitely hang around and talk, because this, we're coming towards the end of this cycle, so some of the material is building on other material. So what we do in this is we start off by kind of getting our head right, especially on a Monday. And I was sick this weekend, so if I'm a little loopy, that's why. but I'm really happy to be here. So we're going to open this gold book, and Erin's going to read these the prayers, the two prayers. And for those of you here for the first time, it's a way to set your intention. So everything we do in Buddhism, we talk about, you know, our intention, your intention behind an act, your intention behind a thought. It's the intention that counts. Even in our legal system, we all know that. It's the intention that counts. So even with our practice, it's certainly the intention that counts. So when we start by doing prayers or meditation, it's to create that intention and really solidify it. So we're going to do this prayer, and I want you to, it's going to talk about all beings. So for a minute before we do this, just think about all the human beings that you know in your life since you were born. It's probably a pretty good handful. You know, try to see all their faces, people you like, people you don't like, people you just see on the street. That's a lot of people, especially if you've been to other countries. That's a whole lot of people. And then all the people that they know. You know, so we're just trying to get an understanding, what does this mean, all beings? So those are just human beings. And those are just the beings you know. Not try to imagine all the human beings that are on this planet at this time. As though you're kind of like in an airplane above, looking down at all these many, many, many cities of many, many, many people. And then try to imagine also all the animal beings. Pets, wild animals, those that live on the earth, in the sky, in the ocean. Just all these many, 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 many animal beings. And then insect beings. in trees, in the ground, in the water, flying, crawling, just masses of all these insect beings. And then if you're familiar with the idea of invisible beings, you know, beings that we might not be able to see, then think of those as well. Okay, and then Aaron's going to, and we can, what page is this, Aaron?
34.
So we'll all say this together.
The four measurables?
Yeah,
the four measurables. Starting with the first one and pausing each line?
Yeah, we'll pause for just a second if you can remember after each line, just to try to let what we just said sink in. Because sometimes it's easy just to repeat it. All right, so.
May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering.
May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And then we're going to continue with a meditation. So get into a comfortable position just to try to let Monday slide off of us before we get going. So the most important part is to have a straight back. So if you're sitting in a chair, just make sure both of your feet are flat on the floor. And tuck your chin down a little bit so that your spine is straight all the way to the back of your head. And eventually, I mean, at home you can play with this a little bit too to see the position you can get in so that it's easily your vertebrae are just stacked and you don't have to really hold your muscles tight to be in alignment. And your arms should be out from your body so that your breathing can be unencumbered. Eyes gently closed or a little bit open. And then this meditation is really to just practice our focus, bringing our mind back over and over again to our breath. And letting our mind, our busy, busy mind, just have a little break. And so when you see your mind wandering, because you're going to tie your mind to a count of, say, 1 through 5 or 1 through 10, every inhale, exhale is 1, then the next one is 2, and so on. Just have something to put your mind on. And when your mind wanders, it's okay. Don't be hard on yourself. Just actually be so happy that you noticed, because it's really amazing that you noticed your mind wandered, so then you bring it back and start the count again. That's the whole point. And eventually, the point is that you can see when the thoughts are starting to rise up, and you can notice that. And if you put your attention on that, oftentimes they'll settle back down. And then you might notice that you'll get a little break in between those waves. And there you can really rest. So let's give that a try. I will ring a little bell in about 5 to 10 minutes. Feel free to move around if you get uncomfortable. If you hear noises, that's just more grist for the mill. Okay. And slowly, as you're coming out of your meditation, take a minute to set your own personal intention. It could be that you think of something you would like to shift or change or ease in your own life. Some problem you're wrestling with, some response that you'd like to see you change a little bit. How some information tonight might help you. And then if you can, try to see the ripple effect of achieving that. The effect, positive effect it will have on you on and on into the future and all of those people you come in contact with. Okay, and then slowly open your eyes. All right. Some of you were here 2 weeks ago when Don Hendrick was leading the class. How many of you were here? It's like, great, come on up and help me with this. So do you remember he was talking about the 8 worldly dharmas? Does that ring a bell? All right, so I'm going to list these on the board. There's lots of different ways that lots of different people have come up with names for them so that you can remember them. But they're really helpful to remember, and they'll be on the test. So let me write them down. And it all comes down to, you know, what you want and what you don't want. And they're called worldly dharmas as kind of a sarcastic, tongue-in-cheek thing. Because we know dharma means something that liberates us. So a worldly dharma is that something that's, you know, keeping us tied to the world. And that these things in themselves have multiple sides to them. The problem with them is that they're really sticky. They're not bad, but they keep us in what we've been talking about this whole time, which is this cycle of samsaric existence. So, and they come in pairs. So one is, you know, wanting, some people say, possessions or money, but it's wanting things, you know, wanting to have things, wanting to own things, and then not wanting or avoiding to lose those things. I saw a bumper sticker on the way over that said, I'll remember, but it was very clever, and now I can't remember. It was something like, things don't make the world go round. I don't know. I'll remember it. So the next one, so that's number one, wanting things and not wanting to lose things. Then wanting people's praise and not wanting their criticism. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about how some of these things get us into trouble. I'm sure you have many examples as well. Okay, the other one is wanting a good reputation. It's a little bit different than praise. So wanting a good reputation and not wanting a bad reputation. And the final one is, you know, wanting sensory pleasures. I'm just going to put pleasure up here. And not wanting pain. And again, nothing wrong with avoiding pain. So the question for all of us is, when do these things get us in trouble? And as Don was talking about, Don, thank you. Having a problem tonight with these things can get us in trouble. These things are also really tricky when we start talking about. And he said, you know, this is like graduate school. You know, we there's lots of different things that we do. Just looking at this is like going into, you know, writing our dissertation in the fifth degree of our graduate school or something. It's tricky. It's tricky, but they're meant to help liberate us. So let's take a look at some of them. And, you know, the main point is that these also, the troubles that we get into are the very things that get us out of trouble. I mean, if I asked each one of you pretty much what brought you into Buddhism, what brought you here, you're probably going to list something that was difficult. You're probably not going to say, well, I was having this fantastic year, and I just thought, what else would I like to do except go hang out in that wonderful center? There's probably something a little challenging. Probably something a little challenging where you're like, I want relief from this. Thank goodness, right? Thank goodness we want to avoid pain so that we can find some way out of the prison that we're in or find some way, some relief. There's nothing wrong with that. But wanting things and not wanting to lose things, and all of these things on this list, our whole existence can be spun by them. I remember some teachers saying, if you can think of, you know, even like a 10% of your day that wasn't run by this, that's pretty freaking amazing. You know, it's not, there should be no shame in it. It's just really looking at it and trying not to be, trying to get some space between it. And the main point is that these external conditions, so I also look at these things as like weather forecast. You know, all of these things, whether it's up or down, is us trying to develop equanimity in between it all. Just like in that prayer we were saying, you know, about equanimity. Wanting to have some equanimity so that we can see these things just the same way we do when we turn on the weather channel. Okay, what do I need to bring? An umbrella or a coat? And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the conditions, not like, oh my God, it's going to rain. I'm going to be so miserable. It's more like, these are the conditions that are on my plate right now. How am I going to navigate this? How am I going to navigate this with equanimity rather than it completely disrupting my center? Because if we look at ourselves as a river of consciousness, you know, and you have this name for this part of your river at this moment in time, the point is to keep that river of consciousness as bountiful, as clean, as wonderful as possible for you and all the beings around that river. And when we are not in, we feel just at complete mercy of the conditions, then we're going to suffer as well as every single person around us. So we don't have to give up what's important to us. We just have to include that in the larger picture. And I can personally tell you that my problem has been a lot that I've just cut myself off and looked at everybody else. And then I need to be able to use what's important to me as well as others. So sometimes every one of us has to figure out which way we're managing this, what issues are problems for us, and how to take the next step forward. But in a nutshell, I'm going to read you this one little quote I found. Ancient Buddhism and modern positive psychology both agree that it's internal states of mind which are primary causes of happiness. Virtuous states of mind like love, generosity, patience are major contributors to a happy life. Also, mindfulness and open mind and caring for others are all things which can be developed internally in relationship with the world and be the cause of a peaceful, happy person. So 2 weeks ago when Don was explaining some of these things, there were some really good questions. I don't know if anybody's here who was asking them, but the thing about the top one, you know, does that mean, people were saying, does that mean how do I enjoy things then? You know, how do I enjoy something and not become subject to this kind of teeter-totter? Is that something you all are wrestling with at all? Okay, yeah. My answer to that is there's nothing wrong, and this is what Don was saying, so I'm not just going off rogue here. Yeah. Yeah, about like, I was asking if some of you all wrestle with how do you enjoy things without getting all stuck into not getting caught in this wanting things and losing things. And how do you actually then relate in the world? We are physical beings. We're in this physical world. We have nice things. Is that going to become a problem for us? You know, I have this wonderful chance to go on this vacation. Uh-oh, the eight worldly dharmas. Yikes, maybe I shouldn't go. That kind of like, what do I do with these good things if it's also causing problems, if it's also keeping me stuck here in samsara? Should I just not do those nice things? That came up as a question when Don was talking about how these things kind of rule our day on this unconscious level. So one of the things he was saying, and I have played around with lots of examples for myself with this, is it's not the things, it's not the enjoyment that's causing the problem. It's the holding on to it so tightly that we have enormous suffering when it moves, because it's going to move. It's kind of like when you're on the train and you're holding onto the platform because you don't want to leave that station. So it's not the enjoyment that's the problem. It's the fixation with it. I mean, none of these words even sound good, right? Fixation with it, you know, the obsession with it. If we can hold it more lightly. So one of the things Geshe-la uses as an example, which I really enjoy, is a hotel room. You know, when we go to a nice hotel and we're like, wow, this is really nice. Look at these extra goodies they gave me. I've got this and going on. It's great TV and yada, yada. We're not surprised when we leave the next day. We're not overly attached to that hotel room because we really know the contract. I'm staying here for one night, two nights, whatever. We enjoy it. We don't say, oh, my God, I should sleep on the floor. I'm going to sleep on the floor in the bathroom because I don't want to enjoy it. That becomes another problem. It's like, I enjoy it, but I'm not grabbing onto that hotel room and trying to make it mine, right? I understand. I'm passing through this. That's easy with a hotel room. But we want the challenge is to use that same way of enjoying it and using it and not grabbing onto it and being disappointed when it leaves with the other things in our life, with our life itself, with the things that come in and out of our lives, to enjoy them for what they are, to use them for what they are. So if I have a beautiful painting and I put it on the wall, to also understand that the wall and the painting and me, we're all moving. We're all in this one big transition. But I can still put the painting on the wall and enjoy it for while I'm there, right? It's that kind of balance. And it's not easy. It's something we always kind of have to remind ourselves of and keep looking at. And how is it that it would become a problem? How is it that that would cause us suffering? So here's when Geshe lived in my house for 9 years, and I remember once I came into the kitchen and he had this broken mug up on the windowsill, and he had dropped it and it was broken. I said, oh, let me get that and take it to the garbage. He goes, no, I want to leave it there. I said, why? He goes, it reminds me of impermanence. So then it was around that same time I had talked to my sister on the phone, and she had this mug that she really liked, and she had broken it, and she was distraught because it reminded her of something, and she was searching the internet for one just like it, even though the one just like it wouldn't be the one that it broke, you know, and so she was really upset, and she was spending an enormous amount of time trying to replace it, and, you know, it had ruined her peace of mind for quite a while. And so that's kind of the difference. That's how it can really, you know, get you stuck. That's a simple example, right? I think we can all think of examples when that grabbing onto something created enormous problems for us. You know, we weren't able to see clearly because we were just focused in on this thing. So I think that might get to the first one, right? Doesn't mean you don't lock your door. It doesn't mean that you don't protect your things, but it means kind of looking out for when are we getting unbalanced with this. Same with praise and criticism. I don't want to lose my center of who I am because I'm so worried that you all might be critical of something I'm going to say. I might have to just take a risk and say something that some of you might are like, what is she talking about? You know, be critical of me. That's okay. I want to stay focused in, I want to make sure that I deliver what I'm supposed to say and do this in a way that's helpful, rather than having my motivation be that, you all spread the word and everybody comes to this class and everybody can see how great I'm doing. That gets into reputation, right? Because reputation doesn't have to be even something I'm hearing. Praise and criticism are something that I'm getting directly. Reputation and bad reputation, the things that people will do for one of those, is what starts to get us in trouble. Does that make sense? These things make sense? Do they seem like really obvious or like... Ask me some questions. So I know, yeah, okay. And we have to pass this microphone around because people at home are watching. They're watching me. You all are anonymous. Yeah.
Hello, Steve.
Hello.
So this gets into, like, when people talk about other people. I don't know, you know, like, in my work, we hear stories about people, and I'm more, like, going to go to the person and ask.
Mm-hmm.
But then it builds, things build up, stories build up, and then I believe what she said, even though I don't know that, and then it suddenly everybody believes the not true thing.
Right.
So that it's kind of the same stuff. They're kind of the same to me. I mean, they're different, but if I'm talking about somebody's reputation, and then the person might even believe that they're not, you know, like with your kids, if you mm-hmm. think they're clumsy and you say, oh, you're clumsy again, you fell again, then the child starts mm-hmm. to believe that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the criticism become and the reputation become the same.
They can become the same thing. The praise and the criticism, and I'll double check on this, is when, you know, feeling very upset and dejected when they criticize us and disapprove of us, even when it's the truth. So it's more direct. Okay. Like, okay, so reputation, I don't even have to hear directly from somebody. You know, it could just be my reputation starts to build negatively or positively out there in the world. You know, people at my job know who I am. And that reputation starts to build, even if they don't say anything to me. But my boss may give me direct criticism or praise. Yeah, but so they build and they overlap. But praise and criticism and reputation, they can't. Their reputation is a little bit bigger, and it doesn't have to be something you hear directly. So, you know, you develop a bad name. If somebody develops a bad name for themselves, it has effects. But it might not be anything that somebody said to you directly. There was just an example I was going to give.
So is reputation, so wouldn't I choose in my mind what I thought was good or bad? You know, like what you, I don't really know what you think of me, so.
Mm-hmm. But you might know, you might know what reputation you've developed, right? And, you know, the whole classic thing, a woman's reputation, mm-hmm. your reputation's going to get around town. Nobody, you may never hear directly about that, but the effects, you'll feel the effects of that,
okay.
right? Where somebody might say something directly to you, like, you know, why are you wearing that? That's the direct criticism that you're going to hear. Yeah. So, you know, I saw this film about St. Francis of Assisi, and he had so many followers and everybody praised him so much, and he was really looking for some criticism because he wanted to work on this. And so he was having people direct, he was begging his students to please criticize me, please criticize me. And yeah, right. What a thought.
I'll be there.
I know. Well, there's a reason he's a saint. But that was so that he had something to work on. You know, because everybody was just constantly praising him. There was a problem with just having all that praise.
Right.
There was nothing for him to work on. So he's like, please criticize me. That didn't have anything to do with the reputation, though. But they can go together. People criticize you. It starts to spread. It starts to build. But reputation can also be like, I hear Geshla talk about this a lot, like teachers who get caught up in, like, how many students are coming to this class? How many people are attending? They're not what they're saying, but they want to develop and show this big reputation they have. Same thing if you say you wrote a book. How many likes do I have on Amazon today? You know, that can become, you can be so obsessed with that. Oh, what did this person say in this comment section? Oh my goodness, you know, now that's going to mean people are not going to like it. So, yeah. That makes sense. Were you going to say something? No? You sure?
Yeah.
Anybody else? Did you have a question? No. Yeah.
So how, I can understand working with things, okay, so I'm enjoying the sunset, but I'm not going to try to make it last forever.
Mm-hmm.
How would you work with praise? Because if Lori did a good job at something and I was like, wow, you did a really good job, like, mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense for her to say, oh, no, I didn't. I didn't do a good job, you know?
Right.
But is it like, I mean, with things I can think, oh, that's interesting. I have the karma to enjoy this. I should, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. keep up the good behavior to enjoy things in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Praise is hard. It feels more personal than things mm-hmm. to me. So what should Lori do when I tell her she did a really good job and give her a lot of praise?
All right. So I have a couple answers, and I see a lot of people have answers too. So one thing is the same way of holding it lightly, you know, not like clinging on to that. I want more of that. And tomorrow, if I hear something negative, it's going to destroy this. It's like holding it and rejoicing in that. The other thing to do is to wish that other people had that same amount of praise. You know, like, oh, may all other people be able to hear the same thing and feel this. This is a nice feeling, you know. And also, I've seen Geshe-la do this a lot. Like, I remember when my mom would tell him that she really enjoyed what he was teaching on Sunday. He wasn't denying that, but he was saying that's from your good heart. That's from your good mind that you see that and say that. He wasn't saying she was wrong. He was saying that's the result of your good heart. You know? He expanded it. He didn't push it off. He was just joining. Like, she's saying, you're good. I really enjoyed this. And he's saying, you saw that because you're good. You know? And in a way, that's what he's saying. He's saying, that's the result of your good mind. So you can internally think that. You see that in me because that's the result of your goodness. And then may all people be able to experience being held positively in somebody else's eyes. And I have another example, but I don't want to cut off. Everybody had some ideas. Kevin? And then we'll move up here.
I was just thinking it's that that attachment that you can get to it. So say for praise that, I mean, if you do something, don't expect that, or mm-hmm. are you destroyed if you don't get the praise?
Right.
You were expecting it and it didn't come, that you're attached to that
right.
feeling. Just do it and
right.
not expect positive or negative.
Right, hold it lightly. It's like you don't want to like snort it like a drug, because soon you'll be mainlining it. You know, it's like more praise. You know, that wasn't enough that she said this nice thing. Why didn't he say this nice thing? You know, yeah. Did you have something you wanted to add? No? Okay. You did, right? Yeah, and then we're going to move up here.
So what I was getting off of is like kind of just not letting the praise dictate your actions, in the sense that you're trying to get the praise so much it's changing who you are, because you're trying
right.
to fill this role just to gain the praise or
right.
avoid the criticism, and it's changing who you are.
Yeah. I think it's really tricky because, you know, we need feedback, but we also need to hold our own counsel. So even if I feel I'm learning this every day at my job, where I can get a lot of negative feedback, but I have to stick, like, no, you know, this is actually the right thing to do. No matter what this person is, you know, saying right now, I feel like I'm doing a good job with this, you know. So not being addicted to that commentary. Yeah. And then she had her hand up here.
The way I relate to this eight worldly dharmas is how we use them to justify yourself importance, like with praise. You know, there's a tendency in the mind of trying to use it to make you feel or yourself better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm so good, and then you know, you feel, you know, bigger and better than somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the same with reputation. I mean, everybody has this a certain level of, I'm going to behave this way because this is the image I want to project, and not that other image.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this sense of self that you're trying to, like, perpetuate
mm-hmm.
with all these actions or strategies. Well, the mind, not you, but the mind.
Right. And even, you know, at minimum, we can see the positive things, the good praise, whatever is coming our way, as impermanent as that mug that's going to break. So this is, and okay, this is really, I'm glad this person feels this way. I'm glad it was positive. I'm glad it was beneficial. It's also shifting. So, you know, but it's tricky. You don't want to just deny it, but you don't want to get addicted to it too. Did you have something you wanted to say? And then we'll, yeah.
I'm very interested in criticism, warranted and unwarranted, and how do you deal with that?
Yeah, me too. well, I guess if we can develop the mind like St. Francis, that this is, you know, if we can, this is why mindfulness is so important, this is why meditation is so important, so that we can start to see something as it is arising. So if our reaction to the criticism is built up to here, we don't have much of a chance to like get a handle on it. If we can see, like today, this woman was upset with on the phone, and I had to just keep trying to really ground myself to listen to all this so that I could find the way to help her rather than just react to what she was saying, which was very tempting to do. So it's I don't know if I'm getting to your question, but the downside of it, you know, why is this on this list? Because we'll do so much to avoid it. Because it'll unbalance us, and then we react in ways that keep us on this whole cycle of cyclic existence. It's not that the criticism is positive or negative, or the praise is positive or negative. It's our response to these that then creates these seeds of karma that keep us going on and on and on and on and on. So if we can create some little distance, and like I was trying to do today, whatever it is, there's all kinds of tricks to help us try to stay centered, not detached, you know, but more centered. And we'll talk about some of those. We'll talk about some of those so that we can choose the right way to respond. You know, yeah, Jack.
Well, I think when you said you were being centered, you're dealing with your internal stuff. Mm-hmm. Where it's criticism, it's all external.
Mm-hmm.
And external, your opinion and somebody else's opinion of whether I did a good job or not, they're not going to be the same.
Right.
You know, so I'm trying to get something that's not real.
Right, right. Exactly. That's, you know, in that quote I read earlier is that, you know, we're trying to manipulate the environment around us to get happiness. And so in some ways, we're all going to have to do that. You know, I mean, I want to stop at the stoplight so I don't get hit by a car, and I want to avoid pain. You know, so there's wisdom that we have to use to do that, but it's exactly right. We spend so much of our time manipulating the outside environment and forgetting to work on the inside environment as it relates to the outside environment and keeping it in perspective. This is one person's criticism. Maybe I can pay attention to it, you know, and learn from it. It's a tricky balance. So that's why it's graduate school, you know. Something we can, that really blew me away when this one teacher said, there's probably not 10% of your day that's not ruled by this, you know. We are here on earth. I mean, we are, but there's ways to, we get breaks from it, ways we learn more, ways we can't just get sunk down to like, oh my God, it's hopeless. No, you really do see how you evolve through things and get a better view of all of this. One of the things I wanted to talk about, too, is, and I think it gets to some of what Aaron was asking about, is the way that renunciation plays a huge role in how we get free from some of these things. So renunciation is one of those words that we get really tripped up on, I think, because we all end up thinking of like somebody who's just an ascetic sitting in a cave who's renounced the world. And I've told many of you that one of my favorite definitions of renunciation is renunciation does not mean going away from the world. It means knowing that the world goes away. So when you know that the world goes away, the praise goes away, the hotel room goes away, the beautiful painting goes away, it doesn't mean you stop enjoying those things. It means you relate to them differently. You know, now for some people it might freak them out, like, oh my God, everything's going away, and they're very upset. It doesn't mean that there's nothing. It just means that everything's a river. You know, until you can land in the ocean of enlightenment, everything's moving. So once you realize that it's not that, it doesn't mean that you have to go away. It means that you're with everything in this movement. Then you start to relate to it differently. And if you've developed this sense of renunciation, this incredible joy arises, so I've been told. So this incredible joy arises, and you have incredible amounts of joy and pleasure that's not stuck on this. And so I think, what? Yeah, renunciation does not mean going away from the world. It means knowing that the world goes away. Sure. And I would include in the world means you and everything. You know, and it doesn't mean empty and nothingness. It means it's just this incredible river of everything being impermanent. And then enlightenment, I would say, is like the ocean. You know, so you were just constantly moving downstream until we can get off of this cycle, and then there's this immense joy. So developing this sense of renunciation allows us to have that exact hold relationship that I was talking about. So if we had developed true renunciation, I mean, if you want to close your eyes for a minute and just imagine what it would be like to have this sense of just incredible centeredness around all of these things, negative, positive, joy, pleasure, hotel rooms, the street, everything. And now I'm going, with that sense of renunciation, we're all going on this incredible field trip to your favorite vacation spot. Imagine what that is like. Imagine where it is. If it's an island, if it's, you know, some town in Portugal, wherever your favorite vacation spot is. Take a look at that for a minute, because we're about to land there. And what would it be like to walk in that gorgeous vacation spot with true renunciation? My heart feels so incredibly large that all I do is want to share it with everyone. I feel so overwhelmed with love and generosity that every inch of that vacation spot, is something I'm just offering to everyone. I'm there, I'm consuming it, but I'm not holding it. See if there's anything else you notice in how you're relating to that place. Okay, and then open your eyes. That if we had true renunciation, that would be our very, when we encounter pleasurable things, that would be our very first thing. It's just, oh, wow. It wouldn't be, no, can't look at that. It wouldn't be, oh, it's mine, I can't wait to get back here. Or like my father, who is from the South and now lives in England where it's really cold. And so when it's warm in England, he's so happy, but he's also instantly freaked out because it's not going to last. So he's like, oh, it's such a nice day, and we're not going to have that many. And it's just torture. It's just pure torture for him. So it's a really interesting lesson to me to watch that, you know. So instead, I imagine that this renunciation is just this overwhelming, arms wide open. So I, you know, when different monks came to my house with Geshe-len, some of these, it was their first time being in the States, and I would take them someplace like Harris Teeter, and they would stand there, just, they'd never seen so much food, right? And they would just stand there with that same feeling I'm describing to you, and they would just walk around like saying all these prayers because they were offering it. They were just offering it to the whole world, because that also is you know, the three gates, our gates of body, speech, and mind. Our thoughts count. And they count, even though you can't take that food and offer to all these beings. Just having that thought, that's your first thought when you walk into a place like that. You don't have to, okay, wait a minute, I'm supposed to do this. It just comes unbidden. Wow. You know, that's the kind of thing that starts to change your mind, makes you different, helps all the others around you, if that's the first thing that you're thinking and feeling and walking around with. So something to practice. We have so many opportunities here. I took another one of them to the K&W cafeteria. It was just like, wow, you know, this whole platter of food. Yeah. You got the mic.
I have so been tripped up by the word renunciation.
Mm-hmm.
Because in English, that's not what it means.
Right.
And so, fortunately, I found somebody speaking who said that Tibetan word, mm-hmm. in translation, does not really mean we renounce mm-hmm. those things. You can't have those good things.
Right.
I mean, you just said and gave us an example of not holding on to something.
Right.
And that's not what the word renunciation means to us mm-hmm. when we say it in English, but that's what this is really telling us.
Yeah.
Is enjoy it and go to liberation.
Mm-hmm. It really means giving up suffering. I mean, that's the way the Dharma definition of renounce means to, and I want to go look at the root of the word, you know, again, because I think, yes, culturally we have totally screwed that up, you know. We don't have much positive that comes to our mind, you know. It means I can't have. It means all the things I can't have. When instead what's supposed to bring to our mind is, oh, suffering. We've given up suffering. You know, we've given up suffering. We're enjoying this, you know. But it's not with that kind of selfish, oh, great, thank you. Is it a surprise? Mm-hmm. Renounce. Renunciate. Protest against. Yes, let's protest against pain. renunciation, let's see. From Latin, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, to protest against. Interesting. And its popularity has gone way down recently. It was really high 1800s. But thank you. Yes, Victorians loved that word. but yeah, that's why I think it's really important for us to come back and try to get a handle of what's that word mean. So in all the Buddhist drawings you'll see, so there's Buddha sitting on a lotus throne. The lotus represents renunciation. That's the very first step. And the renunciation, the lotus grows out of a pond of crap. Pond full of duck crap and bird poop and fish, dead fish. And out of that muddy, mucky pond grows this lotus, beautiful, unstained lotus. And that is the first step. And so what I was doing mistakenly for many years was not even looking at the pond, my own personal pile of shit, right? I was like, no, let's just go to the lotus. I just want to look at the lotus. I don't want to use that. I was just using Dharma studies to just go there. And it's only been more recently that I've thought, oh, I can actually connect this to my life difficulties. They're not separate. They are the same pond. And that's helped me enormously. So now I go back to some of these things I've learned before, and I was like, yeah, I was just cutting all this stuff off. And I was also having a problem because, I mean, Geshe-la told me this a long time ago. He said, your problem is you're not including yourself in any of these prayers. May all beings have this, may all, da, da, da. And I say this in case anybody else is doing this. Everybody has their own way of, own issues to look at. But if you're doing this, I feel you, and, you know, we gotta work on this. So when we look at some of the mind training texts, which we're going to, you know, when you put others ahead of yourself, so there's a different way to do that if you're somebody like me. You don't want to ignore yourself. You're part of the equation. It's your pond. You know, it's your muddy pond that this lotus is going to grow out of, not out of thin air. So it's important to include yourself. So let's look at, because I think part of the 8 verses of mind training. Is this in stuff that they have online? Okay. Okay, well, I think it is. And Aaron's going to tell you how to access all this stuff on the DB website for those of you who are new, so that you can find the readings. And the 8 verses of training the mind are something that I want to go through during the next 4 weeks. I memorized them. I didn't memorize these exact translation. They're really helpful to memorize, and they're not that hard. So I'm going to, for homework, I want to give you the first one to think through and memorize. So I'm just going to read this now while Aaron figures, you know, we can figure that out later. All right.
So the first, since some people did read ahead, they're good students. The first article in the PDF of our online reading, which we have all the documents how to get there, is Eight Verses of Thought Transformation. It's a commentary by His Holiness. And so it will list the first point and then have discussion on it, and then the second point and have discussion. And you can highlight it like Tim, and then you can go straight to the...
Okay. Tim, you want to read us the first one? Because I don't want to read one that's not the exact translation that you all are going to be. They all get to the same point, no matter which translation you're reading, but why don't you read the one that they're going to see?
Determined to accomplish all success, I shall always practice holding dear all sentient beings who are more precious than wish-fulfilling gems.
Okay, awesome. So wish-fulfilling gems is a term you hear a lot in Buddhist Dharma texts. It means, imagine a beautiful gem that would grant all your wishes, especially enlightenment. So read the last two lines again, the last parts of that. You're going to hold more precious.
I shall always... practice holding dear all sentient beings who are more precious than wish-fulfilling gems.
Okay. They are the wish-fulfilling gem. In other words, it's not outside, that it's other beings who are the causes for our enlightenment. Difficult beings, wonderful beings, problem beings, they're all causes for our enlightenment in the same way that there's certain problems that brought us here, that these things cause us problems that we look at. You know, it's all, like I said, like putting things into a rock tumbler. My sister had a rock tumbler when I was a kid. She left that thing on way too long, and everything came out just like muck, you know. You have to be skillful and know what you're doing. You put it in for a little bit, it just comes out nothing. Nothing's changed. You leave it in there for 5 years, it just all comes out dirt. So if you know what you're doing, it can turn into a beautiful stone. Same thing with all the stuff we're working on. We're trying to clean up our minds so that it's beautiful. So that first verse, does anybody want him to say it so you can write it down now, or do you think you're all going to be able to find this and get it for yourselves? You want him to read it out loud again?
Determined to accomplish all success.
Determined to accomplish all success. So, yeah, well, let's slow it down because I'll even tell you what that means. Determined to accomplish all success, meaning enlightenment. You're determined. You're determined, okay?
I shall always practice holding dear all sentient beings.
I shall always practice holding dear all sentient beings. Doesn't mean you have them live with you. Doesn't mean that you don't, you know, find, it doesn't mean that, yeah, you're not going to be mindful and skillful about who you associate with. There's different ways of holding beings dear, okay?
Who are more precious than wish-fulfilling gems.
Who are more precious than wish-fulfilling gems. So even the most challenging, difficult people. But we're going to start with the first step, because then we'll get up to the most difficult people. So we start with this. Just, may I be able to see that all beings, bugs, all beings, are precious in that they can help me reach enlightenment. That they are more precious than some great gem, right? That they are the cause for my enlightenment. That's what we're trying to do. So think about that. I want you to think about that this week. What I'd love for you to do is to write that out on a card, put it in your car or your desk at work, your wallet, and have several of them around. So that first of all, you memorize it. And second of all, you start to really question it. How is this possible? What does it mean? How do I do this? Bring in your questions for next week. okay? Because it's not something that's, this is like super, super, super advanced. This is really difficult. This is why it's towards the end of the module. And again, it doesn't mean that you're just like, oh, everybody. When I first moved to New York, I could never get on the subway because I'm from New Orleans, where we're all pretty slow. And I wasn't like going to be pushing people to get on this subway. I'd have to let subway after subway go. And finally, my friends are like, you're never going to get to work, you know? So you have to get on the subway. You know, you have to just muscle in there and get on. Doesn't mean that you've knocked people down. I don't know why I got off into that tangent, but... anyway, you have to use wisdom. It doesn't mean that you let people walk all over you. In other words, you have to see this is a mental attitude of I'm here on planet Earth. There's some really difficult and challenging people on this planet with me at the same time. How can I use that difficult thing? Oh, I can generate compassion for this tragedy I just saw. Or I can generate compassion and try to understand, how did this start to happen? How did this person who's so difficult, where did that come from? You know, that could have been me. Or that, you know, there's all kinds of things that we do, right? One meditation is, and I challenge you to do this one this week too. I'm giving you a lot of homework because it's easy homework. Well, it's not like you have to write a book. Meditate on, how is it that I'm related to everybody else? How is it that I could generate this idea that everybody, that I am connected to everybody? What do I have in common with all these other beings? You know, how is it that, because that starts to help us develop equanimity. The third thing I want to say before we kind of come to a close is this word cherishing. So just like Jack was talking about renunciation being a difficult word, it used to really trip me up, self-cherishing, because when I first heard the word self-cherishing, I thought, oh, that's nice. But it's used negatively. You know, that we want to destroy self-cherishing. So then I found a different way of looking at it, and somebody helped me with this, which is, no, think of selfishness. We never think of anything positive about selfishness. Whereas self-cherishing, self-love, self-esteem, those are all, have some positive sides to it. So think of selfishness when you hear, like, that we're trying to destroy self-cherishing. You're trying to destroy your selfishness, because selfishness is when you're not taking into account anybody else. You can and should still take care of yourself and put yourself in the equation. The problem comes in when you're not putting others in at all. You're just being selfish, you know. So you may come across self-cherishing a lot. Try to get your head kind of straight with that. Renunciation, kind of start to practice these different ways of looking at things. During the week too, come up, you know, bring in some of the things where it's more challenging, like when Aaron was talking about, what do you do with praise? You know, how do you not become attached to praise? How do you not push away some of these things we're talking about, like pain? What do you do with pain? You know, how is it that pain or the opposite of pleasure causes a problem and keeps us stuck? How does it create seeds for our being stuck in samsara? You know, think about these things so we can talk about them as we move on. And what we'll be doing is going through these 8 verses. You know, each week we'll talk about at least the first 4 during this class. And there's some wonderful teachings online about them. I'll try to bring some in for Brian to show us. Let's see if there's anything else. Okay, here's one thing I underlined. Self-cherishing is an attitude of strong self-interest that disregards others. It is invariable behind attachment and other deluded minds, causing them to arise and strengthen the harm they do. It is the main attitude to blame for all problems on a small or large scale that prevents enlightenment, peace, or happiness. So this selfish attitude that is looking out just for itself, that's the main problem that keeps us doing these and keeps us stuck. So the point isn't to not take care of yourself, it's to include others. Even in your thoughts, even when you walk through Harris Teeter, even when in that open-hearted feeling, you know, sometimes it's frustrating because we feel so ineffective in being able to help others. So I remember when I started to really understand this, each night when I would lay in my bed, I'd just think about how amazing it is that I have a bed and a warm, comfortable home. And I would just try to offer that, you know, instead of all the maybe anxiety, like, oh, I have to move, you know, all these different things. No, just how amazing it is I have this bed to sleep in tonight. So things like that. What is it that you can mentally offer, which again develops this attitude of renunciation or giving up suffering? Okay, so let's take a minute to wrap up. And we do this by, you know, you started by setting your intention, and you end each session, and if possible, your day, by thinking of the merit that you created. You know, and by merit, we're saying like the positive seeds that you just created by getting yourself here on a Monday, by paying attention, asking questions, taking notes, thinking about this. How many people do this, you know, let alone on a Monday night? That's something Geshe-la always says, is just think how many people right now in North Carolina are spending their time doing this. This is huge. You can rejoice in it. You can then dedicate the positive energy that you've created and steer it in the direction you'd like for it to grow. You can also join it, like joining grains of rice into a huge bowl of rice. You can join it to all the merit that other beings have created. You can think of all the incredible saints, bodhisattvas, Buddhas, teachers have created and join your merit to theirs. You can imagine that this merit, may this merit ripen as quickly as possible to completely cleanse your mind so that you can see more clearly, love more perfectly, know what you need to know to become completely enlightened. Thank you all.